And welcome to the Steam Power Podcast. Chicka 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 chicka.
Hello and welcome from beautiful downtown Southern Maryland for February 1st, 2015. It's Steam Power Podcast, episode number 59. We are a bi-weekly podcast dedicated to bringing you the latest and the greatest in science, technology, engineering, art, and math news, as well as the open source movement, the maker movement, DIY, hobbyist stuff, whatever other things you enjoy that's geeky. Steam Power, the power to change the world. I'm Mike.
I'm Lisa.
And it's time to get
steamy.
All right. In 2 weeks, we are doing good.
Mm-hmm.
Every 2 weeks, we're on this now.
Yeah, we've been every 2 weeks on Sunday, about the same time every day.
So, been doing good. It's been a busy 2 weeks, though.
Yes, yeah, it has.
It's been crazy. Like today is just shooting by. It's Super Bowl Sunday, which is...
You know, this is the first year since I can remember that I couldn't tell you who's in the Super Bowl.
It's two football teams. There's the one football team, and they're going to play against the other football team.
Yes.
Except it's not football. It's more like handball.
It's American football. Americana. Yeah.
Something like that. I don't know. Strange how much I know. So anyway, real quick, we'll give a shout-out to our sponsor. We want to thank Audible for their sponsorship. Head over to audibletrial.com/steampowerpodcast.
You're going to pop the page up?
No, I'm not.
Oh.
I forgot to. I'm just going to do this.
Let me just say, too, that I tried Audible.
And which book did you try?
I tried Yes, Please, Amy Poehler. I'm still in the process of listening to it, but it works it's seamless. Works in the car, works on the iPad. It works great. So
it works.
Yes, I'm very pleased.
It's because if you listen to one device and stop and go to the other device.
It syncs up where you were, yep.
That's nice.
Yes.
That was such a pain in the butt.
Yes.
So we thank Audible for their sponsorship. You can, again, head over to audibletrial.com/steampowerpodcast. Sign up for a free 30-day trial. Basically, you'll get one credit, which is good for one book, so you can listen to Yes, Dear?
Yes, Please.
Yes, Please.
Yes.
By Amy Poehler. Or...
Good book, not for kids, though.
Or some other books.
Yeah, there's a couple other ones I think I would like to listen to, too.
The nice thing is once a month, you will get a new credit. They will deposit a credit into your account.
Yes.
And you'll be able to go to your websites and download
them. And most of the books are just one credit. So it's not like they give you one credit and the books cost... I mean, maybe there are some really long ones that cost two, but most of the popular ones are one credit, so that's nice.
If you're addicted and you need to have the book now, you can buy additional books outside of your normal cycle.
Yes.
If you want, if you so desire.
But I love it in the car, honestly. I really like listening to the car. I think it makes the drive pass by a lot quicker.
Paying attention to the road.
Yes.
Pay attention to the road.
I always pay attention to the road.
Hey, who's got that?
My driving record
is better than mine.
Yes.
Hey, that was not my fault. It was my
driving record shows that I pay attention to the road.
Anyway. So, yeah, I'm glad you're enjoying it.
Yes,
happy
I am.
Happy early birthday.
Yes. Gosh, what did... this week is my birthday,
right? Away.
Well,
what kind of cake do you want? What kind of cake do you feel like this year? You want Boston cream or not anymore? You want the ice cream cake?
You know, I'm not sure. I'll have to let you know.
Okay.
No, I don't want an ice cream cake.
All right.
No.
We'll figure something out.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Happy birthday, since we won't see you before the next episode.
Thank you.
So, love you.
The big 3-6.
The big 3-6.
That's such a sad birthday because you're closer to 40 than 30. And you know, it's...
Tell me about it.
And I definitely can. I'm starting to see the signs.
And it opened up a lot. We can talk about that in a minute. We've talked about it. So it's about how we could, like, aging is just a disease and we can reverse it possibly. So there should be hope. You're still young enough. Research will be like, this is only 5 years away. You'll be in your early 40s, mid 40s. That'd be a perfect age to get
from. Start reversing it, huh?
Start reversing it.
Except, who knows? It'll be new. new science, and who knows what, it might actually speed it up or something at first, or I don't know if I trust it, you know.
Your genetic type will probably act the exact opposite of the intent.
I don't know if I trust that.
Okay, so let's, should we, I don't know if I want to do the thing we bought or not.
Well, let's just mention it.
Should we, or should we wait till it actually gets?
No, we should mention it. We made a big purchase. You made a big purchase.
The company.
It hasn't gotten here yet, so in our next podcast, we will do the product review. And maybe a little demo.
A little demo. Yeah. We can have the camera up and have another camera
face. Sure. Maybe a little demo, but tell them what you bought. Finally. I've been after you for months to buy one for yourself.
Not for myself, for the business.
Yes, but
because it's
no well, business. I've been after you to buy one for your business because you use it.
Yeah, so
you've been at PAX Space
using
it more the last 2 days than you have been home.
I feel bad using that for business things.
Yes, because it does use up their cord and stuff like that.
I bring my own stuff.
Yeah. Okay,
I bring my own filament. For business purposes.
Yes.
Yeah, that would be real jerky for me. Yeah, okay, so...
So you bought a...
I bought a 3D printer. I finally
what kind?
A PrinterBot Simple Metal. All
right, and it's the assembled one, correct?
It's the assembled one because I have a project I need to work on. I'm though I would love to do a project. The problem is, for me, is it's...
I just don't trust putting it together yourself because there's... You know, you could, it's got to be just so in order to print.
Bring up the website. Keep talking.
It's got to be so precise in order to print what you need it to print perfectly. So when you put it together yourself, if you screw one screw in a little bit too tight or something, it could really just screw the whole thing up. No pun intended there.
It's not that I would like to build it. As I've built some other
things. But that's more of a project than it is. I mean, this is for your business. You need to have it right.
Well, and the other thing is like, right, and because I do have a project I need to get out the door by like March.
Yes, which we'll talk about
the
later.
The problem is, like you said, is that if I get it and it's going to take me maybe a couple days to set up because I won't be able to sit down for 4 hours straight.
Yes.
So after I get it put together, if I have any issues... And the thing is, it's the kit version, at least it was PrinterBot, the kit version versus the full version is only a difference of like $50.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's worth your $50 to just have it assembled.
And right now they're giving away a free spool of filament. And
which is about, $20-$30?
$20-$30. It's a half. Yeah. Yeah, something like that. So it's probably about it's about $18-$30 somewhere in there.
Okay.
And they're giving away the little... coaster to sit it on. Not a big deal, but still it's something.
The coaster to sit it on?
So you sit the filament on in here.
And I didn't realize it didn't come with it.
It's $15 if you buy it.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So anyway, I like this one because it does a 6-inch cube all the way around. So 6x6x6. Which I think is like 152 millimeters.
Now, is this the same one as they have at PAX Space, or is this a bigger one?
This is the next generation of the one we have been using that you're familiar with.
Okay.
So the PrinterBot Simple, the first one.
And for anybody who doesn't know what PAX Space is, that's our local makerspace that Mike goes to a lot.
It's my social hour.
Yeah. it's the Geek Social Club. Which actually we have a story about the fall of community social clubs in America through photography. That ties in. But
anyway, so PrinterBot, the original one was made of laser cut wood. This is now an all aluminum chassis.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't vibrate as bad, or at least that's what I'm told. And the other neat thing is that if you look by the, you can see the little metal extruder. Next to it, there's this little, so the extruder's the red and the reddish part here.
Mm-hmm.
Next to it's this little aluminum thing that wasn't on the original. That's a, basically, it's an inductor, and as it gets close to metal, it basically it's a metal detector.
Okay.
And so now, in the old, and a lot, not just the printer bot, but in a lot of 3D printers, you had to manually level the bed so that you had the Z height correct. So you had to basically make it level.
It's mm-hmm.
like one quarter. This guy does what's called auto leveling. So it can go down and it does it when it starts to print, it goes around and it probes like three different or four different spots on the board
mm-hmm.
or the bed. And it figures out if there's any imperfections in the Z, like if this side's lower than this side.
Like what happened to the one thing that you printed at PAX Space right. the other day.
So what happens yeah. is this guy, what I think happened. It levels, so what it does, it measures it, and then it takes into account in the software. So it changes your print to account for any deviations in the Z axis.
Okay.
So instead of having to level it, it just takes it into account when it prints, is what I understand how it works.
So the next podcast, we'll have to allot a 10 or 15 minute little time at the beginning for you to show a little demonstration of your new product.
They also have what's called the Print Club. So
so you get filament every, is this like filament of the month like club or something?
So $35 a month, you get 2 1.5 kilogram rolls. Basically, you know, this is about this halfway filled up, one of these bigger guys.
That's if you use a lot though, right? Because honestly, one of those rolls of filament lasts pretty good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's about what you're paying. The difference, I think, is that they'll send you what I look here and I see is like they think they send you
different colors
and perhaps different types. Because I see that like here's a nylon version.
Yeah.
So what they do is they do different materials. The problem
so you
is,
can start like you can use different things and get used to them.
Well,
and it's
smart. Well. Yeah, so you can
see which one you like better.
PLA, which is ours, the one we got does not have a heated bed. So to do ABS, you have to have a heated bed, which you can add. You can buy as an add-on later.
Mm-hmm.
But so now there's nylon. There is something called Ninja Flex, which makes you have flexible. It's a
that's cool. Yeah, plastic. So it's like a pliable.
Yeah,
kind. That's cool.
And MakerBot, the guys that do one of the original consumer grade 3D printers, has announced a. Let me see if I can bring it up here real quick. They are going. They've worked out some composite things. Let's see here. I find it. Oh, they have
dissolvable filament.
So, and you can take it and then you put it in water,
mm-hmm.
and that filament goes away. So, like you
wow.
to build the bearings, you need to have support material.
Mm-hmm.
So, what you do is you print,
and the stuff in the middle goes away.
Right. So you print with normal plastic on one extruder, the dissolvable on the other extruder.
Wow.
And there's another one though that you would really like. Let me see if I can find it.
That would be cool to do a steam power podcast gear like that.
That would be cool to do that. Have one that actually
yeah.
Let's see here if I can find the one that I want to do.
Limestone.
Let's see here. Here it is, composite filaments. So now
oh wow
this year.
Looks like wood and things like that.
They will have ones limestone.
Oh wow. That's
wood. Bronze.
Wow.
And iron.
So no, that's cool. It
prints some really cool things.
Yeah, that's really cool.
So that's coming. They're announcing it's a composite. So it's not pure wood. It's a material that, from what I understand, either has wood-like characteristics or is got wood inside a kind of a plasticky coating. But at the end mm-hmm. of the day, it's still filament. But when you're done, like the wood one.
So it looks like wood.
Well, no. So like the wood one here, the maple,
mm-hmm.
you can sand it, stain it, oil it, and polish it.
Oh, wow.
After you're done printing.
That's cool.
So. Printer and hammer. It's getting there, man. So anyway, I thought I would share it. How about we get into the stories?
Yeah.
For the week, because we're ranting here. So the first couple I just wanted to throw out because.
Just FYI stories.
So yeah. There is a rumor that Google is going to become a network carrier for web for the wireless. So in the U.S., Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile, Sprint are four major carriers. There's a lot of smaller regional carriers, and there's a lot of what's called MVNOs, mobile virtual network operators, so like Ting, and a couple other versions that run on the Sprint network.
Mm-hmm.
I think T-Mobile offers that, but every MVNO I've ever heard of, it rides on Sprint. So anyway, so the rumor is that Google's wants to get in on this game.
So do they want to be a Verizon or do they want to be like a track phone?
That's the question. We don't know yet. Do they want to buy out? I'm thinking what they're going to do. Here's my philosophy. Right now, because customer service will become a huge thing if they go this route, right? So what I think they should do first, or what I think they would do, I will never assume to tell them what they should do. They're going to partner and be an MVNO with Sprint, mm-hmm. or maybe T-Mobile, or maybe both. Let T-Mobile Sprint handle the customer service thing.
Okay.
But over time, I could conceivably see Google buying T-Mobile or Sprint.
Okay.
Because here's the thing. Verizon's AT&T's of the world, all they are pipes. Big, dumb pipes that carry data from one place to another. Now, they want to be an extravagant service. That's why, at least here in the U.S., it costs so darn much. It's because, basically, they have a monopoly.
Yes.
It's an oligopoly or whatever you want to call it. At the end of the day, it's pretty blatantly obvious to see that there's collusion in our industry. That, you know, it's amazing how, like, within the span of, like, a month or two, all mobile carriers announced the end of unlimited data a few years back, right? How did that happen? There's collusion. And I think for the
Google. Oh, there's some bringing that back. What is it? Is it T-Mobile that's saying that?
T-Mobile's bringing it back.
And they roll over your unused minutes and all that. Not Verizon. Verizon's being a little.
Verizon is the biggest carrier. And granted,
Verizon's being a little B.
They are being a little B. And let me play their devil's advocate for them, though, is that they did invest a lot in their infrastructure. So that's why they do have such.
Yes, they do have good service. Yes. That's why we've stuck with Verizon. Because years ago when I was working, the company I worked for had AT&T, and even in the city, the reception was terrible. Right. Terrible.
So
I'm sure it's better now, but
it depends, right? The smaller guys, if you're T-Mobile.
I mean, AT&T isn't a smaller guy.
Well, right, and they're better.
But their reception was very. I mean, you had one bar in the middle of Baltimore. It was bad.
Well, remember, I think AT&T bought out Singular for a while. They were relying on the Singular network, and that was really crap.
Yeah, maybe that was it then.
I think it was that. But anyway, so the rumor is they're thinking about it. More news to come. I think it would be cool. The bottom line is, the reason they need to do it. And Apple needs to, and if they do this, if Verizon or Google goes this route, Apple has to figure something out too. Because here's the thing. We're getting to the point where the market is saturated, right?
Mm-hmm.
The only way to get more new customers is to drive down the monthly cost to play on the, because Verizon or gosh, I keep saying Google and Apple want to sell product. They want to sell hardware.
Yes.
They want to sell services. You know, they want to sell iTunes downloads and Google Play Store downloads.
Mm-hmm.
When the price for just getting on the internet is so high, especially compared to the rest of the world, here in the U.S., you can only add so many new bells and whistles to the phone. You can only add so many services. Eventually, you've got to control the pipe, or either control it to drive down costs, or really incentivize someone to drop their costs. To have competition. If we had true competition, this wouldn't be a problem. Hopefully, by Googling entering it somehow, this will spark some competition so that your monthly prices will drop. They'll be more likely to use your phone, buy more crap, helping Google's bottom line.
Yes.
Or Apple. The question would be, what would Apple do? if they have, they respond.
WWAD.
Anyway, we'll just throw that out there. Next story, real quick. So, talk about this before, Lisa.
What is that little picture up there?
I don't know. I don't know. Some dude from Saturday Night Live.
Oh, my goodness.
So, Google's... I thought this was called Google X, but I don't know what they're calling it. Now they're calling it Google ATAP, Advanced Technology and Projects. I thought it was Google X.
Another acronym.
So anyway, a couple months before you joined, they were announcing this Project Tango, which basically, imagine a tablet phone that can laser scan in inside of a building as you're walking around. So if you wanted to get a 3D model of the inside of your building, help potentially navigate if you're blind and be able to navigate. So anyway, Project Tango was there. At the time, it was a prototype. Apparently, though, they're now going to start releasing development kits, which means they're now to the point where they want to hand it off to developers to test out.
Okay.
That means they see some promise in it. Now, obviously, Google's incentive is go laser map every store, shopping mall, restaurant in the country.
Put it on Google Earth.
To be able to put it in Google Earth. So now when dear sweet Lisa says, Michael, I need you to go to Giant and pick up this, this, and this.
Mm-hmm. You know exactly where it's at.
Wandering aimlessly like I do through the barren wasteland that is our supermarkets. Well, they're not barren, but I would be able to actually find. It would be like, you know, this thing, if you had your building scanned, you could conceivably build services that say, okay, Mike, Lisa has sent you in your Unterlist. Lisa has sent you to get cheese, ricotta cheese. Proceed down and turn, you know, and just like your car navigation.
Yeah.
You know, I would say we go, consent, it would enter, turn right, proceed 30 feet. And as I get closer and closer, in 5 feet, turn left. Or with laser scanning,
that's pretty cool.
Accurate, so you can say, turn left onto aisle 2. And then head down 5 feet. Turn left, look on the third shelf from the bottom.
Wow.
Boom. I would pay
money. You would love that.
I would pay money.
Yes, you would pay for that. Yes.
Yes.
You would pay for that service.
That's time. That would save me so much time. So anyway, apparently.
Except when the deli's busy.
There's a dev kit coming. which, if this photo and the story that comes with it is true, they're going to get out to developers for probably about a year, year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Let them play with it, develop cool apps for it, and then you'll probably start seeing consumer services. You know, maybe it would be integrated into your Google Earth app or your Google Maps app probably in another 2 years, give or take, maybe a little bit more, a little bit less. So anyway, that's cool.
Okay, there's that picture again.
There it is. All right, big news. Big news this week. The Federal Communications Commission, the FCC. Basically, in the United States, our definition of what is considered broadband internet has been crap.
Mm-hmm.
While Japan is putting in 2 gigabit per second, 2,000 bits per second up and down, synchronous, the U.S., we've said, you know what? Broadband we're fine with saying that 4 megabits down and 1 megabit up is considered broadband. That's fast. And lobbying groups and industry, the Comcast of the world, the Time Warner, and it's saying no one in the U.S. needs anything faster than that, which to me reeks of the whole thing of, like, I can imagine back when Ford introduced the car for the common man, and all the horse and buggy people said, well, no person needs to go more than 5 or 10 miles per hour. Why would you want a car? And I'm just like, for being a technology people, you guys are idiots. Because you're right. Right now, maybe not people will need it. But when people have access to it, developers like me will then take advantage of those increased speeds to develop yes. better things. So it's a chicken and the egg thing, but guess what? The chicken has to come first in this case. So the fact that industry is like crying, no one needs it, to me, just it reeks of you know, greed, of stupidity, and of short-sightedness. So, you know.
I think the first one's probably greed.
So anyway, yes. the FCC this week said, okay, industry, if you want to sell your internet as an internet service provider, if you want to sell your services and call them broadband,
mm-hmm.
you now have to offer at least 25 megabits per second down and 3 megabits per second.
Do you think this is because of the increased use of like Fios and things like that, where people are getting used to having the faster speeds?
No, what it is that if this country is to remain competitive in the global economy,
yes,
people have to have a certain minimal level of internet access. 25 and 3 is decent. Mm-hmm. It's not great.
You know, I don't even know if I would notice if it was that much quicker, but to be honest like, with you.
Things like,
when you're a developer, yes, you would notice. Yes.
Well, and right. And so right now, things like this, like imagine today trying to, here's the difference.
Streaming The Amazing Race.
Imagine just trying to do TiVo. Or excuse me, imagine to do things like Hulu. Imagine 10, 15 years ago when we were all on dial-up.
Yes.
You couldn't do things like
stream video, yeah.
online video gaming. If industry had back in the day said 56K dial-up modems, who would ever need anything more than that? Then you wouldn't today have Xbox Live, PlayStation Network, Netflix, YouTube. So what we're saying is no different than what was happening 15 years ago. We now need to have even faster internet to enable the next generation of Netflixes and YouTubes. Things like, in-house doctors. Imagine, to do things like, in-house remote medicine
mm-hmm.
needs a real fast, real solid, reliable internet connection.
Yes.
And again, on just the economy in general, more people are going to be working from home, going to school from home, and they need to have broadband internet to compete in the world. Because the rest of the world, they're dumping tons of money into internet and connectivity because they know it's a game changer for an economy.
Yes.
And the U.S. has to, we want to say that we're the best, greatest country on a lot of things, especially internet throughout the, we are way behind the ball.
Yes, we are.
So I am glad the FCC is basically, if nothing else, this is a wake-up call.
So what other country, we know Japan is one of those that's kicking our butt, but what other countries have?
South Korea is huge.
What about, is it like Norway or Sweden
countries way ahead of us. There's even like towns in Africa. So here's the interesting thing, because a lot of cities in Africa never had dial up or even broadband mm-hmm. fiber cable. They have actually leapfrogged this in a way because they're going to like LGE fourth generation. So they're doing all wireless stuff. And they've already got services. There's some countries out there that have like 100 megabits per second up and down. Now, other part of that is the congestion. Because there's not as many people who are affluent enough to be able to get on the network, therefore there's not as much network congestion.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, the internet can be faster for an individual user. But there's a lot of countries in Africa that are beyond us right now. If you were to say, what's the fastest internet people can get to, or the minimum to be considered broadband? There's countries in Africa that beat the United States.
Wow.
Yeah, that's why it's scary. And that's why I'm glad to see the FCC saying, on behalf of the American people, industry, you are way, way too behind. You are dilly-dallying for nothing other than your money. Okay. We're going to be advocating on behalf of the American people. You can continue to go and offer your slow services. You just can't call it broadband. You can't call it high-speed internet anymore.
Okay. So have we noticed that? When does this take effect?
It's effective immediately.
Have we noticed the difference in ours?
Well, see,
Because we have high-speed internet.
Right. So here's the interesting thing. 2 years ago, our internet would not count as high speed anymore because we were only getting 1 megabit per second uploads.
Okay.
So by today's definition, we would not have broadband internet.
Okay.
Now, January 1st of this year, Metrocast did an amazing thing. They said, okay, we're going to give you for this, you know, they jacked up our price like another $2. But now they went from like 25 megabit sup or download to 75 megabit downloads.
Okay.
And we went from 1 megabit up to like 8 megabits down.
Okay.
So, again, there it is. There's the evidence that industry will move if they have an incentive to do so.
But they raised the price.
They do it on their own by $2.
Yeah, but still, I mean, it's still.
To me, it's a win-win. I want them to have a little bit of profit. I don't mind that companies make profit. But you can't be gouging me. It's one thing to make a fair and reasonable profit. It's another thing to gouge your customers. That's the difference. And I want to end it there because we got to get on to the other stuff.
Yeah.
All right. But so good job. You know, I don't always agree with the FCC. I think sometimes they're dated. Then we sometimes make rules and laws that actually screw the average citizen. But in this case, this was a no doubt across the board. Good. So, good
okay.
Job. All right. New material. All right. Hydrophobic materials. That literally makes water like bounce off surfaces, like
doesn't even absorb
all. I mean, look at that. I mean, you're talking about, you know, using this on circuit boards on your iPhone. Can you imagine your iPhone having this kind of coating?
That would be pretty awesome.
Submarines. I mean, can you imagine all the uses that? The water just literally bounces off.
That's pretty cool.
This is, you know, I think it's cool because it's material science, which is one of those things that I don't understand, but I love. and talking about the 3D printing materials we just talked about.
So how does this affect weather? Are they talking about just in terms of weather affecting your electronics and things
your building materials, your house,
okay,
infrastructure, the grid, anything. So
roofing shingles, right, that water just bounces right off of.
I'm assuming this is going to be a spray on coating.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not now, it will be. So building that into your building materials, into your house, into your car.
So it's like Rain-X or something.
It's like Rain-X.
On steroids. Yeah. Yes. Jinx.
That's what the kids say these days. I said it to some girl said it to me the other day, and I'm like, I said, we both completed the sentence. Like, I said, thank you. Or like, we're checking out, I think, Red Robin.
Yeah.
And she said Jinx, and I'm like, take it back. Because I remember now what my daughter says it to. I'm like, I had to get my daughter to explain to me what Jinx meant. So, anyway. Yeah, so they talk about it's airplanes. I mean, a lot of these materials too. They talk about they are not only they're hydrophobic, meaning they're afraid of water. They're also sleet, ice, bacteria.
Oh wow!
They're self cleaning materials as well. So the idea is you coat these things and anything that would just normally sit on the surface, fingerprint oils,
mm-hmm.
just fall off.
Wow.
So yeah, it could change. Everything from your personal devices that you're in your hand to your house to your
mm-hmm.
the infrastructure around us. So it's pretty cool. And apparently it's a metal surface that was created by laser. So basically you're etching in a certain way.
I wonder how this would have any effect on like criminal science, you know, like people's fingerprints not getting stuck to things anymore and things like that.
Ooh, that would be.
You know?
No, yeah. I wonder. Yeah, I mean, this one here, that's what felt lazy.
You know, because that's how they catch people a lot of times, by fingerprints, you know, forensic science. I wonder how the effect on that would be.
That's interesting. So this story is because there's coatings. This story here is actually talking about, so look here, they're using laser to actually etch it at the nanoscale level.
Mm-hmm.
To give the metal properties to be hydrophobic. So you're right. If
your fingerprint oil doesn't stick to something.
Your fingerprint out.
Yeah.
Right, so that no oil stick onto your finger.
But yeah.
They're talking about metal here, so maybe something about intrinsic to metals that makes it work.
Maybe, but it's still
it won't
interesting concept, right. You know.
You can see
the I wonder what the
next 5 years
will be. I know what the effect will be.
So pretty cool.
Yeah, it is.
All right. Another quick story here. Up in Greenland, two lakes disappear within the matter of weeks.
And how did this happen?
So, in a nutshell, from what I gather of is that these lakes have actually been, what's the word I'm looking for? Emptying and refilling over the past couple of years. What they're saying is happening is that as the Arctic ice melts and gets thinner in places, it's like you're punching holes into the bottom of the lakes. Because these are lakes that are in the middle of a glacier.
So the water is absorbing into the bottom of the lake bed.
Well, it's draining back out into the ocean.
Okay.
So gotcha. Instead of like thinking of a lake here, where if we were to drain a lake here, yeah, you'd hit mud and all that.
Mm-hmm.
These are for the north where it's just glaciers or something.
Yes.
It's ice. So imagine a bowl of ice, and in the middle you've got some water. Well, over time, the heating and thawing caused by global warming is punching holes in the glacier around it that holds the lake. Uh-oh. I thought the cat was jumping up.
No.
So all they're saying is that the water is draining due to changes based on global warming, and it's accelerating. Because now, before it took months for them to do the filling and draining, now it happens in matters of weeks.
Okay.
So, I thought that was an interesting story.
Well, it's interesting because if any of that carries over into the U.S., like, you know, how that would affect
the West Coast.
Yeah.
Experiencing droughts. So, the point is, the point of this one is that, climate, there's weather and there's climate. And yes, this winter may be a warmer winter than last year, and last year was a really cold winter. And today it can be raining, and tomorrow is sunny. The weather is one thing, the climate, the thing that is decades, if not hundreds, if not thousands of years of change. The trends are, yes, last year was colder, this year was warmer, maybe next year will be colder again. But overall, the average trend is still upward, and that's disconcerting because we have kids, and our kids will hopefully have kids, and we want to live the planet better than the one we found.
Yes.
So anyway, it's just more evidence that we, we still have a long way to go in our fight against global warming. So.
Okay.
All right, let's get into some stories that you threw up, and maybe you can help lead some discussion on this one. So,
okay.
This is from New York Times. Academic Science Isn't Sexist is the name of the article.
Yes. Have you had a chance to read it?
I did.
What did you think about it?
I think that there are sexist people in science and engineering and math. We'll say there's men that are sexist. I'll speak on behalf of the male side of the family. But I don't think that means the norm is that people are sexist, nor do I think that the pursuit of technical or scientific or mathematic is inherently meaning you have to be male or that it caters to the male way of thinking or anything.
What do you think about their talk about the statistics as far as promotions and things like that? Because honestly, from what I see just in your line of work and everything, I think that women in these fields actually have a better chance of getting jobs than men in these fields because the fields are so oversaturated with men that companies are wanting to hire women.
Right. I agree that I've talked about the value of.
So it's almost kind of like it's flip-flopped in that sense, yes, they're saturated with men, but I think that trend is changing. It's just going to be some time before we see the overreaching effects of that.
Right.
And they're still trying to throw these old statistics up of, oh, well, this field is so saturated with men and blah, blah, blah. But that's, I think that's changing at a rapid pace, and we just have to be patient.
Right. So I think that you're subtle. I think we are at that pivot point where the people that are in very senior or towards the end of their career, retirement, yes, that is the end of the baby boomer generation. Yes. Is an inherently male dominated. I think
yes.
Since Gen X and onward, it has been equalizing. And you're right. Here on out, I see a lot of career fields going majority women.
Mm-hmm.
My sense in where I work from the day job is that it seems pretty equal.
Okay.
At least on the gender stereotype, on the gender line. I don't want to speak for, and this article doesn't talk about it anyway, the diversity across, like, you know, race.
Fields, or, yeah.
Well,
race,
across different,
yeah.
Other demographic ways to look at people, but gender wise,
mm-hmm.
You know, again, there are still asshole males, excuse my
yes.
French. But I, my sense, and again, I am a white male WASP. So, you know, what I see is skewed because of, the, you know, potentially the privilege.
What do you think about the pure genetics of it all? About, you know, yeah. Women are just typically, they tend to gravitate toward jobs that are more humanistic in nature and more social in nature. And men, let's face it, do have a genetic bias towards
right.
math. They do. And people can argue with me on that, but I think that's been proven time and time again that men just tend to be a little better at things when it comes to math like that. And men are more insular people in that they're willing to work by themselves, and they're willing to sit in their cubicle and code.
Right.
And women want the
interaction.
Yes.
Socialization.
The community feel. Yes. The socialization of the job.
I get that. I think though that you're seeing a blend. I think what's happening is we are reaching an equilibrium where I do see a lot of women that are very insular and want to stay to themselves and just do their job.
Mm-hmm.
And it may not all of them are all maybe technical, you know, but they are certainly math based in like the financial world.
And that kind of actually lends into the other story. We should do that next yeah. about the photography. I think you have the other one next, but
I think that why, yes, there may be still these, my point is that they exist. It's not a glass ceiling or a glass wall or a glass door between.
Mm-hmm.
If you are a woman who wants to be, who doesn't like to socialize and wants to be sitting away and coding like a little code monkey, you're welcome. You're not frowned upon and,
yes.
and vice versa. If you're a more outgoing, extroverted male who, you know, needs to have that feeling of
constantly. I think people expect men to be a little more insular in that respect.
I just think that it's not. I think people now, we've gotten to a point where we just don't care along gender. I mean,
yes, exactly. That's
you have preferences
point.
Of people you want to be around, regardless of the male, female, black, white, you know, gay, straight, whatever. I think those type of demographics doesn't matter. It's the personality stuff that really at this point
yes.
drives. You know, if I want to be around people that are quiet, regardless of who they are otherwise, that's why I gravitate.
It's so
common interests and common.
Would you agree that the gender bias in the STEM field is narrowing greatly?
Yes.
Good.
I do feel like it is.
So by the time, like, our daughter hits college, do you think it'll be fairly equal? Or do you think we'll still be working towards that equalization?
Well, I mean, the thing is, you see, my problem with the word term equalization is that it means it's forced. Like if I have to have a perfect 50-50. What I'm thinking is it's got to reach
saturation.
Women truly are tended.
That's not even a word, is it? Saturation. I just made up a word. Saturation.
You know, if women are naturally more social and they are better at things.
And I think women are naturally more social.
Family medicine, family doctors, pediatrics. I would not want to have a 50-50 male-female. In that case, I would probably want an 85 female, 15 male. Because that's where they're, my point is not, not to force that, but I'm saying if that's the natural.
You want them to be in the naturally.
Exactly.
Yeah, what they're naturally good at. Yes.
People who are good at. Then so be it.
So that's my point.
Natural, and vice versa, if the natural equilibrium is.
That's my point. I think that is the natural equilibrium when it comes to math and science fields, is that men are typically just a little bit more. What's the word I'm looking for? Situated to the job.
That's what I think
just naturally fits them a little better. It isn't that women can't do it and can't do it well and just as well and even better. It's just that men are better suited for it in a social way.
Right. So basically, I mean, what I hope for is that we live in a world, and this is very hard to quantify, and that's why, you know, but basically, if you want to get into a certain career field and you want to be promoted, the ideal state end state is, regardless of your gender, so long as you work hard, are good at what you do, you have a chance to get promoted. If that is your desire of success, if we reach that where people get promoted simply based on merit, then we've won. And if that works out to be 75-25 one way or the other gender wise, and if that's the natural equilibrium, then I'd be happy.
Okay.
So you want to toggle over?
Since we've been talking about the
socialization and
people. Basically, this ties in with the art, because this guy did a, I don't know what you call it, but he went around and did some photographs of what he called the death of community in America. Basically, the dying art of socialization in our country.
Yeah, he's got a lot of pictures of people socializing.
Well, yes, because...
Especially this one, which is obviously at some sort of, soap bubble party in a nightclub.
Because his point is that this is something, I think, that as technology is allowing us to meet people online... The actual going out to meet people, it takes that aspect of it away.
I also find it interesting. It's on the Guardian's website too, which is a UK based.
Well,
so this is where I see. These last two stories, you're going to make me go into my rant mode.
That's fine.
So his article title is "The United States of Fear." Alex.
Yeah, I don't agree with that. Okay, I don't agree with that. But my point with the whole thing is like, okay, let's just use an example of a Weight Watchers meeting. Which I don't know, like,
how about AA? Then I can talk about something.
Yeah, okay, AA, that's fine. It's a similar thing. Okay, so 10 years ago, 10 years ago, if you wanted to go to an AA meeting or a Weight Watchers meeting or something, you actually had to get up, go out of your house, go meet with people, and interact socially with them face to face. Nowadays, what you can do is you can get online and you can have the meeting online, sit at home in your pajamas by your lonesome, yet talk to people on the computer. Is there a difference? That's my point. Is there a difference? Because I see a huge difference in it, and I don't think it's good for our society as a whole. It's good to have that option for people who can't get up and go out to meetings, but I think a lot of people now are using that as a crutch and saying, hey, I don't want to get out of my pajamas. I don't think it's any coincidence that the depression rate in this country has risen with our use of technology when it comes to that.
See, now here's where I'm going to disagree.
Okay.
And that I say technology is an amoral accomplice in this thing. In other words,
I'm not saying that. I'm saying
is
our use of technology.
I'm saying technology is still the scapegoat. What I'm simply saying is, in the United States, we have had a natural migration in this country. People with more conservative views have withdrawn to more rural parts of the country and states that have a more rural background. And people with more liberal ideologies have moved to more suburban, urban centers over the past 15, 20 years. So basically, and then you see this in the election, especially when you do the big national elections like for president. You see what's happening is that though if you look at it from a geographical basis, the conservatives win more of the country in terms of just sheer geography because you say, hey, if this county wins, then you give the whole county to this candidate. But the liberal candidate still wins because sheer numbers, even though they're more concentrated. So my point is that's happened not because of technology. Or let's put it like not because of computer, digital, social media kind of technologies. Obviously, people have to get up in a car and move and drive.
Yes.
So Mike says before that, in the 1800s and 1700s, you couldn't move very far because your horse was your major mode of transportation.
Yes.
And people did not just get up and move, and you lived in the one house your entire life.
Yes.
So my point is that...
But you had to rely on your community back then.
And I still think people do. My point is...
But they rely on it online now.
Well, so here's my point.
The community has turned from the community of a social aspect as far as like a face-to-face community to an online community.
So here's my point. Here's what I'm trying to really drive at. Basically, we are all still social creatures. Humans, at the end of the day, whether we admit are social creatures. So here's what's happened. Because we've all moved physically, because we've moved into counties and school districts and states that reflect our personal ideologies, when we go out in the real world, we go to shopping, we go to the mall, we go to the restaurant, we tend to be around people that reflect our own same view. So when we're out in the real world, all we see is people that are like-minded. Then we go home at night and we get online and now we see the whole world and all these people with different views and that freaks us out. And somehow in our mind, we've made it to be that it's technology that's tearing it apart. And then we go back out into our world of the people that we actually know and we meet physically in person and we all talk to each other and we get each other into a tizzy because now we're reinforcing, oh, did you see the thing on Fox News' website? Oh, did you see the thing on CNN? And we reinforce that to ourselves. And because you're not in the real world, you're not talking to someone that has a differing point of view. The only time you get the differing point of view is online without a chance to have a discussion. But that's because, to me, the technology is the good thing. Imagine if it didn't exist, people wouldn't even know that there's a different point of view. So I'm glad the technology, at least people, has a way to have a different point of view. The problem is when they go out in the real world, the people they're talking with are the people that have the same ideal views because we as a country have become less diverse, even though overall we're more diverse.
But what's wrong with
our communities are less diverse?
What's wrong with okay? Here's my problem with it, though, is that we're replacing it instead of going out and talking to like-minded people face to face.
But there's
replacing it.
But there's nobody left. We physically, when we go out, because we have physically moved.
You know, like take, for example, the Weight Watchers or the AA meetings or whatever. We're replacing actually going out to meetings and talking to people face to face and getting that social interaction, we're replacing that with typing on a keyboard.
I disagree.
And there's something that's lost in translation.
I don't disagree with that.
Through technology.
My point is, no, we haven't. Here's what's happened in this country. What we consider community has changed. Whereas community was defined by your geography before.
Yes.
Now geography is defined by your common interest. And that has to cross physical borders to be able to find enough people to make a community worthwhile. So while we don't go to the bowling alley, or we don't all go to church anymore.
Actually,
we go to the bowling alley more, but we go as
but a we family. Go alone.
Right.
Yes.
That's my point. Is that.
And we're not as likely to strike up a conversation with somebody anymore. Because
we've reinforced in our minds this fear, this unfounded fear. And my point
And that's
is,
what he's talking about in this article, the right. fear.
An unfounded fear, though.
Yes, I would agree with that.
Let me I disagree completely. I'll say one word. Pax space.
Okay.
If anybody does not want to socialize, it's engineering nerd types. Yet we
And see that ties into our last story.
We found it.
See, men are more suited for those kind of jobs.
We found each other on the internet. But at the end of the day, I physically go to PackSpace and I socialize.
But did you find each other on there? Because wasn't PackSpace founded by people face to face who knew each other?
The actual PackSpace itself was founded by the founding people, yes. But the people who joined as members, we found out about it through the internet.
Okay.
So that's my point. My point is, I think we can use the internet as a tool,
but it shouldn't replace.
And I don't think it has.
The face to I think it's starting to.
I think if anything, it's. I would rather have it because if people didn't
and honestly,
have the internet,
I mean, I'm
they would
guilty
never
of
be
it.
Exposed to differing points of view. Most people, because again, we've moved into like-minded physical geographical communities where we reinforce each other's fears and hopes. When we get online, we're exposed to differing points of views, and I think that's healthy. I think that's a good thing.
I think that's healthy too, but I don't think it should replace the socialization of going out and seeing people. And I think having that technology readily available for a lot of people, it has replaced it. For a lot of people, not for everybody.
That's an inherent problem of the person, not the technology.
I'm not saying it is the technology.
I mean,
it is the person. You're right, but we're using the technology as a crutch.
But yet, 20 years ago, without this technology, a bunch of nerds would have been all in our own basements. Now we have built these makerspaces to get together, to socialize and work on projects together. So my point is, so what you're saying is the people that were naturally social before become less social. And
yes.
The people that were less social before are now more social. So the nerds and these geeks
But just think about the people who are becoming more social are the people who are more technologically savvy, the geeks.
But not just online, but physically. I physically go to PAX Space and sit
but
down.
But the people who are becoming less social are people who aren't as technologically savvy and need that socialization.
So maybe they're not using technology because they're not savvy enough.
I think they're using it in the wrong way.
I would agree with that then. So then if they were using technology the correct way, then technology would be an enabler.
I think they're using it as a crutch. They're not using it as...
They're using it to find, go out and reinforce your own fears. Why do
yes.
you go to FoxNews.com and why do I go to MSN?
I don't go to FoxNews.
I'm not saying you.
Oh.
You.
Really. I was going to say.
Saying, if we were two different people, I'm saying of polar opposite political views.
Yes.
Why do you go to Fox News? And because, right, you only see the news that reinforces your point of view. And that has been a crutch. People have used that. But if you want to, if you're savvy enough
And you notice that I don't, there's more than one website. There's more than just Fox News, or there's more than just MSNB. And I go and look at MSN and Fox and CNN and get the whole spectrum of different points of view. So that's my point, is that those people that only look at one website, it's not the technology that's doing it. It's them doing it to themselves, because the technology is enabling them, if they so desired, to go out and look at every left wing, right wing, center wing. But,
and don't you think technology, though, you know, it does allow us to meet with like-minded people with a lot of things. We find those websites and those forums where the people agree with us, and we just want to hear our own voice, and we want to hear people say attaboy, and that's right. And
that's why people used to join the KKK.
So I think people, a lot of people just aren't using technology in a socially responsible way.
Yeah. I think technology is,
and I think that's kind of what this guy was getting at with
is a scapegoat in this whole argument.
Yes, I think that's what this guy was getting at with this thing, is that a lot of people aren't using technology in a socially responsible way, and it's sort of leading to the death of the social group, as it may.
Well, I don't want to belittle it anymore, but my point is this. Definition of community is changing.
Yes.
The technology is a scapegoat in that argument. People have changed. People are still people, and technology is an amoral thing. It can be used for good or evil, however you
feel about it. Yes, I agree.
And that if it, and furthermore, I disagree with the fact that the argument that community is even dying in this country is completely wrong. I simply think that the definition of community is changing.
It's changing. Okay, so the landscape of community, correct, perhaps is dying.
Whew, yes. The idea, okay, let me put this, 1950s, Leave It to Beaver, Jude Cleaver, whatever the other dude's name, Beaver Cleaver, going white Ward. Picket fences.
Let's see, there was Ward.
White picket fences. Beaver. Everyone goes to church on Sunday. One car, mom stays at home, cooks cookies. That world.
That sounds like
which we don't have white picket fence.
Sounds like our house.
We don't have white picket fence. Which, in reality, if you study history, never really existed. The 50s or 60s were.
That's right.
A era of great issues in this country, social strife, civil rights. We have now looked back through history with rose-colored glasses to pretend like those were the better years. They never existed anyway. I think now we're being forced to realize what reality really is. And I'm actually optimistic. I think we are going towards a better future.
Okay. I think that we're starting to lack some socialization in this country. We're using the internet as a crutch sometimes.
Okay. Let's put it this way. And I'll agree with that. If you are one of those people that your only friends, the only way you know your friends is, you know,
online.
darkhorse57@aol.com, yes, and junebug83 at Yahoo. If that's your only definition of friend, then yes, you have a problem.
But don't you think there's a lot of teens and young adults that's the case?
They
only have World of Warcraft friends and that's it.
I don't disagree that they exist. My point is they've always existed. They've always existed. That's my point. And I don't think the volume of numbers of people have changed, actually.
I think the volume has changed.
I think this technology has given us the ability to put laser focus on.
I think there's more of those people now.
All right. Well, we'll just have to agree to this, because we are running out of time.
Yes.
Last story. You're going to have to talk about this.
Has anyone watched the show Child Genius? And what do you think of it?
I'll tell you because what I think of it.
You haven't watched it, per se, but I've watched it, and actually Haley has watched it too. And one of Haley's big comments is, I'm so glad I'm not one of those kids, because their parents pushed a lot of their parents are very pushy, she said, I'm so glad you guys aren't like that with me. But what it is basically is these kids are competing for a $100,000 scholarship. They're all kids with high IQs. And every week there are two subject fields that they have to answer 10 questions in. And it's just every week there's a few kids that are eliminated who get the lowest scores. And it's things like spelling, zoology, math, genetics, vocabulary. It, you know, it's kind of runs the gamut across the board of subjects. And they get 10 random questions. And their, you know, their parents are very on their butt about studying and all that kind of thing. Do you think that is any sort of asset to those children?
Enter rant mode.
Yes.
Okay, so the idea and the reason that you brought the story up, let me provide some
context. I get that they are competing for a scholarship. Right. You know, yes, that's a big thing.
So let's take that out of the equation, though.
Yes.
And understand
take that out of the equation.
Understand it's television. Understand it's major network,
yes.
Right?
Yes, take the scholarship so take out of the part equation. Out.
Now, what I think what you're trying to get at is juxtapose this with what we're trying to do with steam power and reignite science, technology, engineering, art, math. It's not, and to me, it's not just the education. It's the application of that career field, right?
Yes.
And then what you do with it. So – let me enter my rant.
Does memorizing a bunch of facts do you any good if you don't have practical application for it?
In an era of IBM Watson supercomputer that beat every person on Jeopardy, in an era where I have spell check on my smartphone, in an era when I can Google literally anything and everything.
Mm-hmm.
This idea that spelling bees and Jeopardy and IQ tests have anything to do with the intelligence needed to get this country off its ass and moving again is asinine. It is 18th century thinking.
So would you disagree with the whole Mensa movement as
the whole concept is crap, because book intelligence and reasoning out riddles is nothing that we need in this country to reignite our scientific, our engineering, our technical, our industrial, everything about this country moving forward. Does not, in an era in which we have IBM Watson, Google, spell checking it on my dumb phone, smartphone, that we have, the problem is that we, because that was what the definition of being smart was for hundreds of years.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're now in this new post-industrial, digital revolution world. The problem is we still hold ourselves to thinking, well, that must be the way you're smart. And I could not disagree more, because I have seen more people who are so book smart, who can rant off anything that I could, within 5 seconds of Googling, also find out.
Yes.
Have no ability whatsoever to get promoted, to hold a good job, because it's not just – it doesn't matter anymore. I hate to say it. It simply doesn't matter anymore. What does matter – is being able to connect the dots between all of these disparate knowledge bases.
Mm-hmm.
And what matters even more than that is to be able to apply it to generate either new knowledge or to create new products or new ideas or new software that did not exist before, that in turn goes, that's useful to society. Because what's going to carry us, that's why I like the maker movement, the DIY movement, because it's not just about proving how smart you are. It's about, okay, Joe created this one file. So he created this one 3D thing. You know what? It's a really good start, but I need to tweak it a little bit for my purpose. If I took his file and just tweaked it a little bit, I could use it for my purposes. So I take his file. I have creative. I'm smart. I can apply my scientific, my math skills, my engineering to design something that improves upon it. Then I give it back to the community after I've done designing it. People that have those capabilities that can design, that can think, that can problem solve real world problems, they truly are rare. And we do need more of those.
And I think that's where this show lacks the depth, is in the application of the knowledge.
Right. I mean, the problem is being able to memorize facts when I can Google it. No boss, no company is going to hire you just because you can memorize an encyclopedia, because guess what? There's no such thing as an encyclopedia anymore.
Do you think if you're one of those people who – so in other words, you're saying there's no correlation between knowing and doing?
There is correlation. My point is, if you're the person that thinks that simply knowing is good enough,
mm-hmm.
that I should hire you just because I'm really smart, I really did good on my tests, you're not going to survive. As the United States, as we come out of this economic,
where is the correlation between knowing and doing? What's the ratio on that?
Personal. I mean, there's no. This is obviously.
Personal. Personal.
It's knowledge is worth 20-25%. Mm-hmm. Being able to apply it, 70-75%.
And what about of the people you know who are book smart? Do the majority of them have the ability to apply it, or do you know more people who can apply it who aren't book smart?
I'd say the majority of the people are the book smart, not the practical smart. Yeah.
Okay.
And because at the end of the day, remember that's
where I think a lot of these kids fall.
I'm not talking child genius level smart. I'm just simply saying. Yes,
I think a lot of these kids fall in that category.
They went to college. They learned. You know, people that are, you know, they've been out of college for a while. You know, a lot of people just have, because our academic system enforces and reinforces the idea of just rote memorization. And while there are certain fundamentals that have to be rote memorized, your multiplication tables,
mm-hmm.
Certain trig functions.
Yes, we went through that last year.
Do have to be remote. The problem is when you're in like the 12th grade and you still think that, you know, rote memorization of spelling words matters anymore, because while you do have to be somewhat, you know, be able to make to write on your own, the reality is to have precision level wording or spelling doesn't matter, because I can just hit spell check on my computer, boom, 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 5 seconds, I have done, I fixed everything.
Do you think there's a high correlation between kids who are book smart like this and can apply things, or do you think there's a greater growing field of kids who can apply, like playing Minecraft and things like that, who aren't traditionally book smart?
Sure. I think it's going to be awesome, in my opinion. This is Mike's humble opinion. Right. I think kids that have failed in the traditional academic system.
Yes. Because I think there are a lot of kids who are extremely bright and able to do,
and are
but
bored.
They don't get good grades at school. Yes.
I think those people will end up being
they'll
more
take
successful.
Over the world.
Because okay, and I'm not here to toot my own horn, but let me kind of paint a picture.
But Hong Kong.
So in high school, and it wasn't really intelligence. It was for me a lack of motivation and actually putting forth any effort to do like homework or anything. So when I was in high school, I vividly remember this, that I think anybody had like a great, you know, I knew I was going to college, you know, one way or the other, mm-hmm. I was going to be a college kid, be it I was going to go to a service academy or a normal college.
I agree.
But I knew I was a college. That was my route.
You were college bound. Yes.
So it's either end of junior year, beginning of senior year. They call up all the students in my class that have a 3.5 GPA or greater, because you're qualified then for the Maryland whatever.
Distinguished scholars,
right?
Yes. Yeah.
I had like a 3.3 GPA.
Okay.
Because for me, math, surprise, and chemistry really kicked my ass. So
I was good in chemistry.
I was just below that cutoff to be able to, you know, go for this Maryland scholarship.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
So part of like, you know, so it made me question, like, well, really, am I smart enough? Because, you know, I think I'm a smart guy. I feel like I'm a smart guy, a kid. Why, you know, what was that 3.5? Did I really, am I really mm-hmm. not? So that stayed it's in the back the of number. My mind. Yeah. Right. So fast forward, you know, that, so I put, like, I mean, I'm going to, when I did get to college, you know, I liked the subjects more.
Mm-hmm.
Teachers were better. Not all of them, and not all of my high school teachers were bad, but the point was I was more engaged.
Yes.
You know, so I blew out with, you know, like, so graduated with an engineering degree with, you know, with honors, did my master's in engineering, got a 4.0 from Johns Hopkins. So, you know, so if you look through the normal lens of, well, if you were good in high school, therefore it will be a linear progression to you'll do good in college, you'll do good at da 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 da. I was the opposite because once I found an engineering, because I loved engineering, I knew I wanted to be an engineer. I like the hands-on practical application of science.
Yes.
I was able to blossom. And I think there are more kids like that that I hope, and that's why I do the STEAM stuff, is to encourage them, to make them realize that you may suck at high school math, but that doesn't mean that you're not potentially good smart. At STEAM yes. stuff.
I agree. So I think there's a lot of kids that have so much potential that get told every day by the school system that they don't, or even their parents or whatever, because they're not traditionally book smart, but that potential is there. And then once they get that encouragement later on through the hands-on application, like, oh, look at this, what I can do. You know, there's so many opportunities in college that you don't have in high school yes. of different things that you can do.
The clubs.
And once you find your niche, exactly. you run with it.
So here's my, to kind of end this on a hopeful note.
Okay.
If you have a 3.3 GPA in high school, and you really hate math and you love science, but you're not really quite there, even if you hate science in general, at least the way it's being taught to you right now, wait till you get out of high school. And remember, and college is not the only route. We've talked about that mm-hmm. in other episodes
That's
too.
That's true.
Trade schools, going into plumbing, my electrician buddies are doing way better than me as an engineer, okay? So my point is this. If you're one of those kids, you're going to be fine, because the way the world is going, if you know that you're creative and you're artistic and you can mm-hmm. breathe, you're going to be desired. Trust yes. me. Now, from the flip side, you're one of those academic kids and you know the textbook, and I love it because it's a system. I go study my textbook, I memorize it, I can apply it, I can answer the test, and I'm going to get a 4.0 every time.
Mm-hmm. But what good does that do you when you get out in the real world?
I'm going to tell you, it's not going to matter a darn thing in the real world, but that doesn't mean you're not going to be successful yourself.
Yes.
What you need to do is then compensate by developing practical skills. How do you do that? Get out and go get an internship. Even if it's a learn practical skills, join makerspaces, join projects. You know, there's clubs at your college. Clubs, the maker space is basically clubs for people that are either done with college or never went to college. But get out and learn practical skills, because guess what? If you can master three-dimensional calculus, figuring out how to use a 3D printer or a circuit design software is not that hard.
Mm-hmm.
So you've just got to, you know, I'm guessing you're going to tend to be more of an introverted type of person. You got to break out of the shell.
Yeah.
So either way, regardless of who you are, where you're at, you can be successful. You've just got to learn you have to compensate for the other thing that you lack.
Yes.
With that said, the propensity is towards that will have an easier time are the ones that have that creative spark that can get on and do things with their hands, because that is where the pendulum in this country is swinging back to as we come out of the Great Recession.
That's mm-hmm. Okay.
All right.
I think that was good.
That was a good episode. That was a good article. Yeah. I'm never going to watch Child Juice with you, because it'll set my blood pressure off. But anyway, thank you for bringing it up.
Yes, I wanted to hear your thoughts on it, and I completely agree, actually.
All right. So with that, is there anything else you want to end with, send people out into the world with? Any other?
No, I think I'm good quotes? Today.
Check out your Etsy page for
Super Chic Dollies.
What are you going to start doing?
Oh, the little charm bracelets for the American girls and things like that. Yes.
The Pandora thing that got the one girl really rich.
Well, not Pandora, but.
But we're going to do the Pandora for dolls. We're going to work on this.
Yes. It's a little tricky, but.
A 3D printer.
I've done a couple so far, and daughters like them so much that she's decided to keep them. So we failed business 101 in that respect.
How we learn. You can't keep everything. But the first one or two, yes, acceptable.
Yes. Cool. Yes, she liked them so much she wanted to keep them. So we'll do a few more.
So check that out. Super Chic Dollies on Etsy. I have a new podcast, Gears of Resistance, which is going to be a open source hardware focused on projects, electronics 101 kind of stuff, interviews with people. It's in the beta form right now.
And I will not be on that one. But you will be hopefully having some guests.
I'm going to have a guest or maybe work on a co-host. But the idea is, because when I did this blog, I wanted to do both. I wanted to do tutorials and these kind of stories. It just, you can't fit it all.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to spin off the
and
tutorials.
And I am completely not.
But you can come in and maybe, here's what I'm thinking. Like,
I am
doing the, instead of open source hardware, it doesn't say open source electronics. It says open source hardware. So maybe you could come in and do one on knitting. So it was wearable electronics. If everybody wants to do wearables, you could come in and teach one showing how to get started with using your loom thing.
Just perhaps, but that would be about the only way that I am able to do that, because that's completely out of my wheelhouse.
Just saying.
But you have other people that you know that it is in their wheelhouse that you are working on getting some guests. Yeah.
We're going to work on it.
Guest podcasters with you. So
I think the internet's hit on this whole time, too. That's sweet.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
So again, it's going to go to same place. Go to steampowerpodcast.com. Both Gears of Resistance and this podcast will be there for now. Eventually, we may set up something separate, but for now, we'll just keep it all there. So with that, again, steampowerpodcast.com, links to everything we've talked about. If you want to hit our Patreon page, our Cafe Press, where we sell stuff?
Cafe Press. Yeah, that's Cafe Press.
iTunes, YouTube, it's all there. Links to the Twitter,
SoundCloud,
Facebook,
all that stuff.
SoundCloud.
Yeah.
We do a lot of crap now. It's busy. Keeps me busy. So with that, until the 15th of February, we'll move back. Thank you all very much for listening. And until next time, I guess stay quirky and
keep it steamy.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.